Hello. Well, thank you very much to Shay Bradley for a lovely start to the week.
Dubliner Shay Bradley had one last laugh at his very own funeral. Have you heard about this? So mourners got the shock of their lives when his voice was heard screaming, "Let me out!" after his coffin was being lowered into the ground. So Shay, who was a bit of a prankster, he pre-recorded the words before he died and ensured that everyone at the funeral would get a bit of a laugh.
From Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM. Over on Radio 1, Joe Duffy and Liveline had Shay's recording from the funeral where he spoke from inside the coffin, supposedly.
Hello? 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 Let me out! Where the fuck are we? Hello? Hello? Let me out the fucking knife in here! Where the fuck are we?
Joe also had callers on who knew Shay and were there at the funeral, like Danny.
When you heard the speaker going off, we didn't know where to look or what it was. But it was just like Shay was there with us and he planned his own funeral himself. Because no matter what we were or where we were, he was just the man that brightened up a room and he'd make everybody laugh and it was just him. So it felt like that he was there and that he'd done it and he planned it and it was amazing. And I even told Jonathan there and the rest of his family, it was the best funeral I've ever had.
Okay.
It's not something you would say, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. Tell us about...
It was absolutely brilliant.
Well, tell us about Shay Bradley.
Shay Bradley, he'd be in a room with 100 people.
Yeah.
And you'd hear him and he'd make everybody laugh. He'd make a joke over everything and there'd be never a dull moment when he's there.
Danny on Liveline. Back on 2FM, Jennifer Zamparelli's listeners were texting in with thoughts on what they'd arrange for their own funerals.
Someone actually texted me saying, I want to be cremated to the sound of Disco Inferno. Burn, baby, burn. Someone else says, well, I'd have Jamiroquai playing I'm Going Deeper Underground, Too Much Panic in This Town. That's a good tune. My husband got in touch and he said if he was doing a speech, it would all be very sad, but then he would probably just play this.
So terrible. Back in Liveline, Shay Bradley's son Jonathan, who had recorded his father's voice, which was to be played from the grave, he came on to tell Joe a bit about his father.
He'd done a lot of cooking when he was in the army in his earlier years.
Oh, he was in the army, okay.
Yeah, he was in the army. Then he went into the upholstery trade. So
was he a chef in the army? Because he used to say about the army chefs back in the day, the only people that were trained to kill in the Irish army were the chefs.
Yeah, well, he was a chef in the army, yeah.
And so who else is saying then? Is Christmas stuffing somebody saying?
Yeah, he, because of his love for spices and flavours and food, his Christmas stuffing is famous around the family. And every year, more and more family members ask him to make the Christmas stuffing. So instead of making it in a pot, he started making it in basins. And he nearly had to go to... He was making it in the sink and basins. And he's giving portions to more and more family members.
But Shay's culinary ambitions didn't stop at stuffing.
Someone texts in to say that Shay Bradley broke the code. Wait for this. Broke the code to the spice bag. He walked out the ingredients of a spice bag. Have you got them, Jonathan? Did he take them to the grave with him as well?
No, he left them with us.
And what is it? What's in a spice bag?
There's a whole host of different ingredients.
And what possessed him to try and break the code of a spice bag?
He loved it. He loved the whole spice, the whole salt and chilli flavouring. Yeah.
What was he hoping to do?
He was going to sell a version of it online, mail order. You could just order in the spices and then sprinkle it over your chicken and vegetables.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Shay Bradley's son, Jonathan. I'm back on 2FM, still thinking about Shay's funeral. Jennifer Zamparelli chipped in with her own hopes for her own funeral. The Lao she refers to here is her husband.
I want, at my funeral, okay, I want everyone absolutely bawling, snot everywhere, wailing. I want Lau to fling himself on the coffin. I want him to be distraught, to never, ever, ever get over me. And if he even thinks about getting over me, Now I Will Haunt You.
Oh, lucky man. Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM. And finally back to Liveline. And the conversation moved on from Shea Bradley's funeral to other unconventional funerals, like the one for Michael's mother.
Your mother, 94 years of age.
Yeah, yes, Joe. She lived to be... She died overnight in her 94th year in perfect health and had her dinner on the night before, and she didn't wake up the following morning. But her one wish always was that she wanted plenty of music and dancing at her funeral.
Yeah.
So I was left with to be in charge of that, and I have two brothers and a sister. And so on the day she was being buried, on the 18th of April, 2018...
Mm-hmm.
We had about, when we got to the graveyard, there was a big turning table inside the graveyard made of concrete where you had plenty of room to turn. So anyway, we had eight people lined up to dance, and we had about, I think about 10 musicians and about six Boron players. She was always interested in run boys, and that was her life.
Wow.
As her instructions was, before she passed away, and she had instructed us for years back, that she wanted people dancing as she was being lowered into the ground. There was eight of us dancing, so I didn't actually see the coffin going down. The rest of the family were looking after that, and we were dancing gaily right alongside her as she was being laid into the ground. Yeah. So,
but you didn't dance on your mother's grave.
We danced by the side of it, Joe.
Brilliant.
Brilliant indeed. Michael from Liveline. A chat prompted by Shea Bradley's voice being played from the grave at his funeral in Dublin. Odd, but funny. There was an odd moment on RTE Radio on Wednesday morning. RTE Junior was playing a song that's usually hated by parents everywhere.
The wheels on the bus go round and round, round and round, round and round.
While over on Morning Ireland, Gavin Jennings was sounding like a child in the back of the car.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
He was, of course, talking about the endless Brexit bus journey.
The original Northern Ireland only backstop, a case of I can't believe it's not a backstop.
The mummies on the bus go yuckity yuckity yak, yuckity yuckity yak.
And while Morning Ireland was interesting, as was RTE Junior, the news at one later in the day captured in just a few minutes how the wheels keep going round and round on this story.
Level playing field provisions which relate more properly to the future trade agreement, but nonetheless are being worked up and are linked to the agreement. I'm just actually getting a text message as we speak to say that things are looking good. Sounds like game on, I'm told, from a very good source. But
breaking news from Brussels. Tony Connolly, what's happened?
Well, Claire, that news that I just got earlier has been confirmed by a second senior EU source, and it seems that the big obstacle to a deal being done today was the consent issue, and I understand now that the DUP have put aside their objections, and as such, I'm told that there is now advanced optimism that things can be agreed this afternoon.
You may have heard Tony Connolly earlier telling us that his sources had suggested to him that the main stumbling block to a deal was removed. Well, since then, as the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar said a couple of days ago, there's many a slip between cup and lip. Arlene Foster, the DUP leader, has tweeted, EU sources are talking nonsense. Discussions continue. Let's see what happens. On to the sports news. Pádraic Lodge, she couldn't have as much drama as that, Pádraic.
No, we're saving it for the weekend, Claire, but in the past few minutes, the BBC.
Claire Byrne, Pádraic Lodge and Tony Connolly on the News at 1 on Wednesday. Then on Thursday morning, we were all back on the bus.
Unionism has always been more sceptical about that, understandably because they were the majority.
Sean O'Rourke was covering Brexit with Bertie Ahern and Sam McBride, Northern journalist.
I think that's enormously damaging to unionist support for the entire idea of power sharing and the agreement.
I'm just being told, yes, I'm looking at Tony Connolly tweeting in the last 48 seconds, a deal has been done. Now, that suggests the deal is between London and Brussels, obviously. They've solved the VAT problem, which was one that was...
They don't have the document. I think the summit could get into a mess. So I think they'd be very anxious to beat, 11 or 12 o'clock.
Tony Connolly, good morning. You're tweeting a deal has been done. Tell us more.
Yes, Sean, a deal has been done. There is a text which has been concluded, and we're expecting a statement from Michel Barnier in the next while.
Tony Connolly with Sean O'Rourke. But before he left the studio, and just in case you thought this might be the end of it, Bertie Ahern had some bad news in the form of the next stage of the process,
the trade agreement is going to be, I know your listeners will hate to hear this, it's a wonder one station has decided to have a non-Brexit news. I don't think RTE are going to do that. But
don't be encouraging our listeners.
But no. I do think the trade deal is going to be, you know, really a monster, and I'm afraid probably people might get their Christmas, but when that starts for this country, because there are all kind of cliff edges that will arise in the trade agreement.
Bertie Ahern with Sean O'Rourke. One recurring complaint running parallel with all the Brexit talk is, what about the issues that Brexit is crowding out? What is it stopping us from discussing? Cormac O'Hara on Saturday addressed that. The Inspector of Mental Health Services had released a report saying that people with mental health difficulties in Ireland are suffering neglect. So on Cormac's Saturday programme, psychotherapist Enda Murphy spoke about the situation.
Well, I remember a mental health inspector saying one time, it was a good few years ago, he said there's no votes in psychiatry. And that's the reason we've always been at the actual, we've always been the last ones to get anything, because everybody else shouts. And unfortunately, people who develop mental health problems, they don't go out on the streets and they don't march and they don't stop the traffic to say, listen, I want help here. You know, where we're actually at is that, you know, we're exactly the same with mental illness and mental health and the psychiatric services where we were with physical health back in the 60s. And there was a famous cardiologist who said, he says, I'm downstream rescuing people, taking them out, resuscitating them, doing a coronary artery bypass graft, sending them on. He says, I'm spending all my energies downstream rescuing people that I've no time to go back upstream to find out who's pushing them all in. Now, mental health is exactly the same. You know, one of four of us is going to end up in front of a psychiatrist. Full stop. All right. And I'm not going to be particularly, you know, it's just as going to affect me just as well. All right. Knowledge affects nothing. All right. You know, 75% of them will start under 25 years of age. You know, now using tertiary care as our only care, all right, is a bit like sending everybody who gets a sniffle or a cough off to see a consultant psychiatrist.
Psychotherapist Enda Murphy on Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. There was a mental health thread to several stories that featured this week. Gráinne Gault spoke about her daughter Alicia, who died by suicide aged 14. Gráinne said that before she died, Alicia's behaviour had been very challenging.
She had been out with friends, and she had come in, she had been trying to work with us on her curfew, and, you know, she was trying before that to, you know, follow the rules and to kind of settle back in. But on the last night of May 2017, she'd come home after being out with her friends. She'd been happy enough, went to bed, but obviously she had her phone. I wasn't aware that there was a cyberbullying conversation that had been occurring, and that would have been, you know, the first major incident of her taking an attempt on her life.
So you obviously would have been very alarmed by this, Gráinne, and looked for support. You were put in touch with the CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services.
Yeah, extremely, like, concerned. Like, you know, the method in which we had found her, we realised how serious it was at this stage, and we were panic-stricken. But when she'd been brought to Clonmel Hospital and she was in the ambulance, and the people who dealt with her that night were fantastic, and the hospital wouldn't release her until there was a care plan in place. And they had put us in contact with CAMHS in Clonmel, and they had advised that there would be an appointment on the 1st of June that afternoon around 4 o'clock. We had went along to that appointment, myself, her father and Alicia. We'd spent somewhere between 1 to 2 hours going through the consultation questions. We had been asked to fill in forms of personality tests, but we didn't have the time to complete them, so we were told to bring them back on the next appointment. And we had heard for the first time about CBT in that meeting, and it was, you know, positive that we would have a discussion around Alicia's case. We would send an appointment out in the post, and, you know, we'll get you back in. And basically, the only advice that we were given to go home with as a family was to remove anything that could contribute to Alicia taking her life. And that was as far as it went from a parental perspective and a family perspective on what to do for, you know, the coming weeks and while we waited on the appointment.
And what kind of support then did she get in the aftermath by way of appointments and counselling and therapy?
So basically within that, it was around 2 weeks later, we had received appointment to come up. And it was pretty much a waste of everybody's time. The appointment was simply to tell us that after the peer team had discussed Alicia's case, they decided that she didn't have psychiatric issues and therefore the services that they were providing weren't suitable, and that Alicia wasn't going to try this again. Isn't that right, Alicia? As he turned to Alicia, and Alicia agreed with him. And that was pretty much the extent of the support services that we got for a 14-year-old girl.
To try what again, sorry?
To try and attempt to take her own life.
That she wouldn't do that.
And how wrong he was.
Gráinne Gáilte with Sean O'Rourke. She's now an advocate for increased funding for psychological services for children like her late daughter, 14-year-old Alicia. Also on the Today programme, another story with mental health elements. The murder of a homeless man in Cork. Timmy Harahan was living in a tent when he was attacked. And Timmy had actually been interviewed a few months ago by Neil Prendeville from Red FM, and he told Neil what he did all day.
Wandering around, basically around the whole city to try and find where can I sleep tonight, is it going to be safe? And in Cork, in most places in Cork, it's not safe in the city centre, around the city centre anyway.
Why, have you been hurt?
Yeah, I've been attacked 3 times and ended up in hospital because of those attacks. The last attack happened 2 weeks ago, and a person stomped on my hand, and I've ended up with fractures on my hand plus fractures down my right side, and the actual rib went into my lung. I didn't have a cent in my pocket, and they probably thought I had something on me.
The late Timmy Harahan speaking with Red FM, as heard on Today with Sean O'Rourke on Radio 1. The music of Limerick man Patrick Mulcahy. That was heard on the programme Taobh Thuaill on Radio na Gaeltachta. On Lyric FM, they had one of the nicest images of the week. It was part of a talk on mushrooms by Anya Murray.
So much variety and weirdness. Ancient writers and philosophers were perplexed by mushrooms. These things without flowers and seeds, and seemingly without roots. Some suggested that mushrooms were an alliance of earth and sky, formed when lightning and rain combined.
No longer the humble mushroom. Anya Murray on Lyric FM. If you have young people in your life and they're into gaming, you'll know that the significant event of this week was not the Brexit breakthrough, but the Fortnite breakdown. Fortnite is an online multiplayer video game, and Mary Wilson accorded the story due gravity on Drive Time.
Yesterday marked the end of the world as we know it. The world I'm referring to is the Fortnite game, which unexpectedly disappeared into a black hole following a massive asteroid strike.
Mary spoke to Adrian Weckler, technology editor with Independent News and Media.
What happened was that the game's owner, Epic Games, had signaled that something was going to happen yesterday, and happen it did. So anyone who was in the game at the time would have seen what looked like a bunch of meteorites starting to hit the island, the game world that they were playing in against the 99 other people that they're doing battle with. and the island actually blew up. It was destroyed. And then all you could see if you were playing the game was just a black screen with a small hole in the middle. Like, it was supposed to be like a black hole. And that's what Fortnite is currently streaming at the moment. We've had about 21 hours of nothing but a black hole. And of course, you know, parents around the country will have mixed feelings about this, because on one hand, a lot of them give out about Fortnite because their kids come home from school and spend hours playing the game. On the other hand, their kids have spent a lot of their pocket money on things like skins and weapons, and they're wondering what has happened to those assets.
So you'd expect it back overnight, would you?
Yes, I would. I would expect, if you are one of the hundreds of thousands of players here, or if your child or teen is playing the game and they're wondering where all their dances and their skins are, I would expect that by the time they come back from school tomorrow, it should be back up and running.
Adrian Weckler from Independent News and Media. And Fortnite did return after 48 hours, you'll be relieved to hear. Video gaming turned up on the new season of the Poetry Programme in the form of Super Mario. Stephen Sexton told how he set out to write a poem about the Super Mario game, which he played as a child.
It's fairly straightforward. Super Mario is a small Italian plumber. His condition, I suppose, is that he must travel through strange, fantastical worlds. The game itself involves moving from left to right across a screen, jumping over things, avoiding things, much like a line of verse, for instance, might move from left to right across the page, and it might also avoid things, as is often the case. And I thought, why don't I write a poem for every single level, all 72 of them, of Super Mario World? Why not describe a video game?
However, this effort was intruded into by another life experience, that of his mother's illness and death.
And I realised then suddenly that perhaps I wasn't just messing around. Perhaps this elegy started to creep into this world as I tried to describe it. Yoshi's Island 2. Pixels and bits. Pixels and bits, their perpendicularity. One of the worlds I live in is as shallow as a pane of glass. The threshold of the window sets a frame around the holly tree, wild funguses slimy with dew and toxicity. The rubies of holly berries sing on the branches the robins hide among, and the veins of ivy vines wind around the slumping trunk and boughs. Slow berries in the blackthorn and the carcinogenic bracken. Groundsels loiter along the low-dashed wall the daisies loll about. One summer's day, I'm summoned home to hear of cells which split and glitch so haphazardly. Someone is called to intervene with poisons drawn from strange and peregrine trees flourishing in distant kingdoms. We take the air in the garden, bitter with berries and mushrooms too toxic to eat, where the grass bows in an unexpected breeze.
Yoshi's Island 2, a poem by Stephen Sexton from the Poetry Programme on Radio 1. And believe it or not, Super Mario turned up a second time this week, this time on the podcast Bjóar Eigin, where Áine Shún agus Sinéad managed to range in conversation from Mario to Colleen Rooney to Slippery Dick Moran from Glenroe. And when you hear their voices, you'll wonder, how are they old enough to know anything about Glenroe?
Bhí Colleen an roundglimps a scoil agus don gón ar tú thug sí Brittany Irahane.
Oh my God, fantastic.
It's Brittany, bitch.
Hog the nig in Mario and Marongsa and in the Mario Brothers, yes.
Oh, imagine you won the whole Mario it.
Yeah, it's Mario Gajas, Marianne. Yeah.
Mario Testino, Mario Rosenstock.
Rosenstock. Rode kind of Mario Rosenstock and Ihella, honey, my grush, I grud Gabriel.
You ask kind of, no, Husher Nordon, because we Ihe.
Was Gwildon again?
Neil and Eritson again, no, so it's a mirror that
David.
Dr. David Oakland Rowe, yes. Bacha. Of course. Oh, because we shashu the mach like Cathy Belton.
Oh God, yeah, I guess be in shin. He'll miss you go to shield Mala Fidelma, but obviously
Fidelma,
yeah,
Fidelma, the roll of the hay with Miley.
Oh, the best. Oh,
Miley Cyrus.
She didn't hate sex scene. Really, is covering them actually in floor.
I guess near chef you sexy.
It was like just being sexy
on because it would be tea.
They rolled over in that sexy way.
It was all relevant to us.
Oh,
this is
just for Biddy
Ward
Boys.
Cheerio.
Oh, yeah, she's the hearts on the rubric bonus cune. Yeah. Afi clip the floor or his shin are like reeling in the ears and some lady on the e.
But hard that she were reeling in the ears, Sinead. Yeah. I love the 90s, Lishan Aidney Willoughan.
Brilliant day of the 90s.
Defo big Colleen Rooney is reeling in the years 2019. Ach vi husbonnidir an raiach nur a vi bidi agus Miley istig sa histin son vi achna hean raiach istig sa histin
son Bonna Tracy an mar fáista
Denise agus Mary Ann ach dúrtse be nice now to Fidel or something like that
you know it's like,
I don't want to hurt her feelings with me and the world they can marshin agus dúrt bidi and you weren't thinking of my feelings, were you, Miley, when you popped into bed with her or rubbed in fashion?
What an impression.
Mary McDermott Rowe. Fucking hell.
I guess some thought.
Dirty Dick. Give
Dick,
me the Dick
Burn.
Dick Burn. We shall brilliant. We smooth as looking silk and twice as slippery. And Dick Burn.
Dick Burn. Anya Shun, I guess Sinead from the RTE podcast, Bjora Reagan. Don't tell me this is all for nothing. This is Dermot Kennedy on 2FM. On the nights you feel outnumbered, baby, I'll be out there somewhere. I see everything you can be. I see the beauty that you can see. On the nights you feel outnumbered, baby, I'll be out there somewhere. I could have showed you all the scars at the start, but that was always the most difficult part. See, I'm in love with how your soul's a mix of chaos and art, and how you never try to keep them apart. I wrote some words and then I stared at my feet, became a coward when I needed to speak. I guess love took on a different kind of meaning for me, so when I go, just know it kills me to leave. To all the stars that light the road, don't ever leave that girl so cold. Never let me down, just lead me home. Don't tell me this is all for nothing. I can only tell you one thing. On the nights you feel outnumbered, baby, I'll be out there somewhere. I see everything you can be. I see the beauty that you can see. On the nights you feel outnumbered, somewhere. Dermot Kennedy with Outnumbered from The Breakfast Show on 2FM, and that song was followed by their Five Words to a Fortune quiz.
Yes, could it be today that we give away €5,000 with Five Words to a Fortune?
This is the quiz where a listener comes on the line and finishes the second part of five compound words. Meanwhile, one of the presenters goes out of the studio. In this case, it's Greg O'Shea. Then Greg comes back and tries to guess the answers the listener gave. If Greg guesses all five answers correctly, the listener will win €5,000.
Siobhan, good morning.
Hello.
How are you?
Siobhan is a teacher from Rush in Dublin, and she's talking to Darren Garrity.
Fair play, Siobhan. So tell me this, what would you do with €5,000?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know. I'd probably get out of my overdraft.
Okay.
Pay my rent.
That's a very practical thing so to do. Sensible.
Then Greg has to leave the studio and Siobhan has to finish the compound words and hope that he will guess her choices.
Bear.
Claws.
Sun.
Set.
Monday.
Morning.
Fire.
Drill.
And spider.
Web.
Time for Greg to come back in. And remember, if he gets all five words right, Siobhan, the listener, will get €5,000.
Bear.
Claws.
Spider.
Web. Huge. Let's go.
Fire.
Drill. Yeah, she's a teacher, so you had to be there.
Sun.
Set. Oh, my God, one more.
And finally, Greg O'Shea.
This is so exciting.
Monday.
Morning.
Oh!
No
my
way!
God! Oh my
yes!
God! Oh my God!
From The Breakfast Show on 2FM. Ryan Tuberty spoke to comedian Billy Connolly this week. It was a poor phone line from Florida, but there was a clarity to Connolly's chat.
And were you one of those performers, Billy, who just ran to the stage with excitement, or did you stumble up to the stage dreading it?
Well,
I did the dreading thing in the dressing room, and the walk from the side of the stage to the microphone, I changed and got to like it. It was a remarkable thing. I've often phoned home and saying I can't go on. I've got no ideas. I don't know what to say. I'd make my family feel terrible and then walk on and have the time of my life. It's very weird.
It is weird, but
you walk from the wings to the microphone, it changed completely.
And you transform into somebody comfortable and in charge and on fire.
Absolutely. Your voice gets a kind of changes pitch. And it sort of goes up a little notch. And the atmosphere that the audience gives you enables you to start and go on with it. It's a remarkable thing.
Billy said he loves the way that comedy has changed since he first began.
You used to be able to be funny about gay people and all that. You can't do it anymore. I think it's a very positive development. And you can't speak about women the way... When I started in comedy, people were always talking about their wives who were so stupid and the mother-in-law was such a bat from hell. You don't do that anymore. Comedy's by far the better for it.
He said one of the best pieces of advice he has ever heard came from his own son.
And he said everybody should go fishing with their dad. Because fishing takes such a long time. Do you get to the place you're going to fish, then the fishing, then the getting back? He said, so the daddy stuff, he said, lasts about an hour. And after that, you have to talk. You have to talk about everything. And it releases you. You get to speak and be honest with your dad. And you become your friend. So Jamie and I are pals. Though he's still my son, I'm still his dad. There's a part of him that's my pal, and it's worked out great.
And he was in recovery not too long ago, and you said that there was a lack of understanding and compassion shown towards addicts. Do you still believe that, Billy, or has that changed?
I think that's changed greatly. Jamie's been sober for 26 years, and so over that time it has changed radically. Everything has changed. There's a revolution going on in the sexual department as well. You know, all that stuff about transsexuals and bisexuals, and people are so much more tolerant now.
And then Ryan's last question.
Would you describe yourself as happy?
Oh, yeah. If you change happy to content, you'll find that you're happier than you thought you were.
Billy Connolly with Ryan Tubridy on Radio 1. Steve Wickham, fiddler with the band The Waterboys, covered some of the same territory, finding contentment, and in his case, in music. But his earlier memories were very far from that. He remembers that his grandmother bought him a fiddle when he was 3 years of age.
I don't know whether I hated it at three, but I do remember smashing it up and breaking it and hiding behind the wardrobe.
Steve Wickham's father bought him another one, and he went on to be taught in the College of Music by the same woman who taught John Sheehan and Glenn Hansard. But he still wasn't fully convinced, as he told Anne-Marie Kelly.
Do you remember that time, a time at that early age that you realised I actually like this?
I had a moment. I was in the kitchen at home and I was practising my scales or something like that, playing Bach. And... I was doing all that, and then I started jamming around, and for about 20 minutes I was playing this random music that was coming through my head. I was changed, actually. I kind of changed. My relationship changed. I actually liked playing this thing.
And then he came to realise that the breadth of musical styles he could draw from was much wider.
I began to listen to pop music in the radio under my pillow, and the Beatles and Bob Dylan and Lou Reed and the Stones and et cetera, et cetera. And then I was about 14 or 15 and I went to one of my first gigs. It was Horselips. Great Horselips. And I saw Charlie O'Connor, the great fiddle player in the Horselips, playing this black, shiny electric violin, and the crowd going bananas. And I think, I want to do that. So that was the motivation, actually, to play electric fiddle. And my mother went out and bought a pickup in McCullough Pickett's in Dublin, and we bought it on the HP, and I had this little pickup that I could stick to my violin. I had no amp. I used to plug it into the radiogram, and my friend played electric guitar, and the two of us, we were about 13 or 14, jamming along. By the time I was about 15, I had a little band in school, and we did the high reel. And I just remember looking out on the school, in the school hall, and all the kids throwing their hats up in the air as we went to the high reel. And it was a no-brainer. I knew this was for me. I like this business of standing in front of people and they're all screaming.
Steve Wickham with Anne-Marie Kelly on Songs in My Head on RTE Radio 1. You know the way they say that with email and smartphones, the art of letter writing has gone out of fashion? Well, not for the White House. Two letters were sent from the White House last week, both of which popped up on RTE Radio this week. One on a comedy news quiz on Radio 1 Extra, and the other on the News at 1 with Anya Lawler. The latter was from Donald Trump to the Turkish president. Anya was talking to BBC Turkey correspondent Mark Lowen about it.
Yeah, an extraordinary letter, Anya, in which Donald Trump told President Erdogan that history will judge him as a devil if he unleashes a slaughter of civilians in northern Syria. And he finished it off by saying, "Don't be a fool. I'll call you later." Now, this letter was apparently sent from Donald Trump to President Erdogan on October the 9th to try, apparently, to dissuade him from going in to northern Syria, although it comes off the back of a phone call in which Donald Trump was widely believed to have given President Erdogan the green light, effectively, to move in by saying that American troops would be withdrawn. But apparently President Erdogan was so incensed by this letter that we are told that he thoroughly rejected it, threw it in the bin, and then decided to go in and launch the military operation that very same day, even though he was keen to do it all the time. The decision roughly had been made a few days earlier, but this was the final straw that made President Erdogan decide to push into northern Syria in this extraordinary operation that has then reshaped the Syria since then in the last week and a half.
BBC Turkey correspondent Mark Lowen with Anya Lawler on the News at 1. The second letter from the White House last week featured in a question for a listener on the news quiz, "Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me."
Your first quote is from a letter sent to the House of Representatives from the White House.
"The president cannot allow your proceedings to distract him."
So what is distracting the president?
I believe that would be the impeachment inquiry.
Yes, the impeachment inquiry. Very good. Very legal, very cool. This week, in response to the House Democrats' impeachment inquiry, the White House announced its response. Nope, they'd rather not be impeached. Thank you. This is weird. Presidents under investigation have tried a lot of things, but this is the first president to try ghosting the Constitution.
Well, it's just, they have a good point, which is he's so easily distracted.
Really, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, a woman walks by, anything.
Yeah, I know, it's true. They have to protect him.
You know, a penny on the floor.
Yeah. It's distracting.
They're just so easily distracted.
The White House sent an 8-page letter to Nancy Pelosi that insulted her and Adam Schiff and threatened that if they didn't send a copy to 8 of their friends, they'd all be impeached. This letter is amazing. It is signed by a lawyer, the White House counsel, but its legal argument boils down to nuh-uh, that's it.
Is it a lawyer wrote it? Did Rudy write it?
Rudy, well, we don't know who wrote it, but
Rudy Giuliani. I'm so upset. He gives a lisp such a bad name.
Does Rudy lisp?
Yes.
Oh, and yeah. I've spent my life trying to rebrand the lisp. You know, President Trump is innocent, suffering suck attack. No, he has a lisp, and it's ruined lisps. Trump 2020. Yes, Ukraine.
Mo Rocca with Paula Poundstone and host Peter Sagal on the news quiz "Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me" on RTE Radio 1 Extra. There were plenty of sounds recorded on location on radio this week. One disturbing, one gooey and charming, and one to answer a question. The question was for the Mooney Goes Wild panel. Producer Anna Leddy had been abroad in Spain and had noticed that although the cicadas made a racket in the evening time, every night they all stopped at the same time.
And I decided, with my Mooney Goes Wild hat on, that this moment had to be captured. So one evening, I left my phone out, and my eagle-eared brother-in-law, Joe, actually noticed at the very moment when they stopped. Now, that's noisy, right?
That is noisy, huh? Sounds like one individual.
Does it?
To me, it sounds like, well, in the background, there's lots of individuals together. But it sounds like just one animal. Maybe not, isn't it?
But there was certainly one very noisy guy. Oh, hold on now, what's happening?
Time, stop.
What's going on?
They all stopped at 10 to 10, but there is one guy in the distance still going.
Everyone around here has stopped.
At 10 to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has happened for how many nights?
Well, it's the third night, but not necessarily the same time. There have been 10 past 10, 10 to 10, and a couple of nights ago, we think it was about 20 past 9. Silence. Somebody switches off the switch.
Yeah.
God turns them off.
It's amazing. So my question is, how come they all stop at the same time?
Because they're stimulated by the amount of light that's there, and as the evening is coming and as it gets cooler and predators will now appear, they shut up. They're doing it to keep away the predators, but they can operate in the really hot and heat of the sun. Now it's getting cooler and it's getting darker, and suddenly their sensors say it's now stop, because otherwise something will grab us.
And can I ask, is it a very ignorant question to ask, why do we need such noisy individuals?
Well, we don't need them. I mean, why does the world need us noisy people? I was looking at the noisy people on the back of your tape and I'm wondering, you know, whether we had something else about robins and noisy people as well. I mean, why blame wildlife for noise when humans are very much better able to make fierce amounts of racket?
Oh, very unsympathetic Aine ni Launa with Anna Leddy and Derek Mooney on Mooney Goes Wild on Radio 1. The disturbing sound came from the beef farmers protesting outside the Department of Agriculture, where they were trying to stop members of the Meat Industry Representative Association getting into the building.
Our correspondent Fran McNulty was interviewing Cormac Healy from the meat industry when this happened.
You're going into these talks, there is something of a shadow with claims that legal actions and injunctions remain in place.
With the legal actions in relation to protests and blockades outside meat plants have been honoured, and that's all we have to say at the moment. They have been honoured.
The farmers here are insisting they haven't. They're insisting they haven't.
The blockades outside of all meat plants and the injunctions in relation to them have been
honoured. Cormac Healy then realised there was a situation, and he and his delegation then moved towards the front door of the Department of Agriculture. In doing so, they were pursued. One man literally rugby shoved Cormac Healy into the back, jostled from side to side. Members of the delegation been pushed in all directions, one of them being kicked repeatedly in the legs as he tried to approach the front door of the department. All the while, Claire, shouting, roaring, foul language being used. Cormac Healy saying, we want to get into the department. Can we please get into the department? We need to get into the task force to begin the business at hand, to look at the issues in your sector. But he was told to go home, and shouting, go home, go home.
Fran McNulty with Claire Byrne on the News at One. And then in complete contrast, this charming little snippet from the children's radio station, RTE Junior.
The sound of babies. RTE Junior Radio. Good for the imagination.
Wasn't that lovely? From RTE Junior. This is Grace by Wallace Bird.
It's not the right time
to be steady right now. Steady means to hold emotional empathy. We set to back down.
Wallace Bird from the album Woman, Radio 1's album of the week. And that was heard on Late Date with Cathal Murray. The same night, he had the kind of request you don't get every day of the week.
It's just gone past midnight and my granny Nancy Stewart has just turned, wait for it, 106 years old. She was born on the 16th of October 1913. She lives in Clonard. And I'd love if you played her a little dedication. She's asleep now. But I'm just lying in bed in the room next to her and dreaming of how lucky I am to know her and to love her. That was sent in to 51551 by Louise. So Nancy Stewart, happy birthday to you. And we're lucky to have you. And have a great day on Wednesday.
Well, following on from all that, Nancy was all over the news and she even got mentioned by Ryan Tuberty, which tickled her so much she sent him a voice message.
Hello, Ryan. Thank you for mentioning me on the show this morning. I felt so happy and so relieved that Sir Manny likes me and I like everyone, and I advise everyone to keep nice and quiet with their family and neighbours and be kind to each other and help anyone that's not able to help themselves. Thank you, Ryan, very much. You're very kind to me. And you can come and visit me anytime you like. In the old house on the side of the road.
Nancy Stewart at 106, getting down with Ryan on Radio 1. And on age, although he's very much younger than Nancy, Sean O'Rourke told how recently he got an unexpected reminder of his age.
We did the show in Cork last Friday week and I came off the train and got onto the Lewis. And for the first time in my life, a young woman, she got up and she offered me her seat on the Lewis just into the city centre. And I didn't know whether to laugh or cry.
Sean O'Rourke, and that was part of an item on manners and etiquette. Apparently there's a new form of etiquette, or lack thereof, in the whole new world of electric cars. That's according to Michael Sheridan, who was talking to Marion Finucan about what happens if you want to take an electric car on a long journey.
If I'm on my way to Mayo,
yep,
and I'm driving a car,
yeah,
and it says you're going to run out of electricity...
Muffins.
Take me 5 hours worth of muffins.
Well, if you went,
some of the fast chargers, there's fast chargers around the country. And over a cup of coffee for about 40 minutes, you will charge maybe 40, 50% of your battery.
And you'll meet new friends who have EVs who are queuing and charging.
Yes, exactly.
There's a whole load of protocol there as well. Dermot will know this. You rock up to a place and if you don't stay with your car when it's being fast charged, there's scoundrels who will actually default emergency stop the charger you're at, so that they can start their own charger. Because you get a little charge key with your electric car. I'm showing it there. And people will do that type of thing.
It happened to me.
So there is a network of people.
Really? Yeah, yeah.
And you wanted to literally brain the person. Not that Dermot ever would, but
of course.
There's
touchy-feely.
Not so touchy-feely at all. Michael Sheridan and Dermot O'Hearn with Marion Finucane. And this ad was one of the most tongue-in-cheek ads on RTE Radio this week.
He was a virus looking for a victim. She just been vaccinated by a Macaulay pharmacist. He just couldn't break down her defenses. Macaulay Pharmacy presents She's Just Not That Into Flu, starring the flu vaccine.
From 2FM. One of the great things about the RTE Radio Player is, of course, that if you miss one part of something, you can scoot back and find it. So, for example, there was this reaction of Ray Darcy's So, for example, near the end of Ray Darcy's programme, there was this reaction from his listeners to Rhys McClenaghan's interview with Ray earlier in the show.
Maria Crowley says, congratulations to Rhys McClenaghan. His routine was fantastic and what a breath of fresh air. Rhys is, says Steve, knows he's good and not afraid to say it. More of our sports stars and even us mere mortals should be the same.
But what did Rhys say? Time to hit the player and find out.
Reece McLenahan made history in Stuttgart this weekend by winning Ireland's first ever medal in a World Gymnastics Championship. How are you doing, Reece?
Yes, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
Just for people who don't know, your discipline is the pommel horse. It's a hugely difficult discipline in gymnastics. How long have you been doing it?
I've been doing gymnastics since I was 6 years old. No, I don't start out on the pommel horse, just choosing that individually. You start out doing everything. So you start doing the, you know, the vault, the floor, the rings. There's six disciplines in men's gymnastics. It got to a point where I found out that I was very good on the pommel horse. I was overtaking the other kids, and I always just loved the pommel horse. So if I got an opportunity to go on that apparatus, I would. Now, that's one of the reasons why now I'm one of the best in the world on the pommel horse. And that's pretty crazy to say. So I've won all of my medals on that event, and it's great.
I love the way you said that. I'm one of the best in the world. You weren't saying it boastfully. You were just saying that's a fact. I am one of the best in the world at pommel horse.
Yeah.
Reece McLenahan, gymnast with Ray Darcy, confident sounding, and a woman who you might not expect to sound so confident, given all she's been through, is Amy Dunn. She gave one of the most compelling interviews of the week to Sean O'Rourke. Amy became known as Miss D when she was 17 years of age in 2007. And that's because she had become pregnant and was told her baby had anencephaly and would not live long outside the womb. She decided to travel to the UK for an abortion, but she was in temporary foster care at the time and the HSE took her to court to stop her. Hence the name Miss D. She was anonymous in the case. The HSE lost the case, but Amy decided not to go ahead with the abortion, but to have an induced labour. She had named the unborn baby Jasmine.
By going for an inducement, you wanted to give birth.
Yes.
As opposed to any other procedure or process.
Yes.
And there was a long labour then, what, 16 hours?
It was a 16-hour labour, yeah. I went in on the Thursday, in having contractions, and I refused to take any medication, unknowns to the fact that actually Jasmine had already passed away, which they decided not to tell me because they knew that would really upset me. So in my young brain, I thought maybe she would take a breath if I went through with the 16 hours labour and I wouldn't take pain relief. They offered me all sorts of pain relief, to which I refused. I think around 2 hours before she came out, I finally agreed to morphine because everybody kept insisting to go ahead and take it. So they obviously knew
so
I wasn't going to harm her.
After the birth, then, what happened? Did you hold her or
this
what happened?
This was the worst part. So I gave birth to her around 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning. It's a bit hazy for me. And obviously with all the medication and the 16-hour labour, I probably fell asleep for a moment or I wasn't well. So when I woke up, I just remember my boyfriend at the time put me in a wheelchair and wheeling me into the next room. And by God, that's not what you're expecting to see. She had fingernails and toenails and everything that a full-term child has, only for she was small, very small. It took me a few times to go back in and get to grips with it. I mean, a few times in a very small moment because I knew I didn't have time. I knew I had an 11 o'clock flight. I eventually went in and I held her fingers and her toes and I touched her, but things moved so, so fast. A priest was coming to bless her. There was things that I needed to get sorted with my body. There was a lot of decisions being made very quickly and the priest came in and he held her and we did a blessing and I found out afterwards that her face was covered with a blanket, that everybody else has seen my child's face but me. And because I wasn't in my own country and I was in a rush back to Ireland, I didn't have time to get my head around what had happened, to get courage to hold her and you know, look at her. So I have never seen my child's face and I have never gotten to hold her because I was in a rush for a flight back to Ireland.
You feel it would have been a different situation, a different experience, had you been in Ireland for all of that?
Of course. And as well, with the whole court case and being exposed, I mean, if this had never happened, I would have went, I would have had an abortion, and I would have lived with the regret of, oh, I had an abortion. But now that's not what I have. I have a baby I carried. I have a connection. I have a grave. I've had a funeral. I have pictures. I have a child. I have memories. I have newspaper clips. I have Wikipedia of my name. I am forever haunted instead of just being able to go and do what I needed to do. I have tried counselling myself throughout the years, which to what I can afford is more voluntary counselling. You're more dealing with the likes of SOSAD who are very good to me and things like that, but I don't think anyone was equipped to deal with my situation. I felt like people were treating it as if like your grandfather died or something. So I ended up leaving counselling, feeling like I was more counselling myself, and it didn't work.
And do you think at this stage it would be useful for you to get some help in that regard?
Absolutely. I mean, like, I'm 29 years of age, and I think the older I'm getting, the harder it is to deal with, the more real it becomes.
Amy Dunn from Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTÉ Radio 1. These are the Lost Brothers, who played live on the Today Show.
Tell me what's the use in a man doing all that he can. Everything he holds in his hand is but an echo in the wind. Wasted days turns into years. Empty bottle drowns my tears. Seems that everything that I hold dear becomes an echo in the wind. No, just an echo in the wind. Every road sign I see, every paper that I read, telling me that I'll be free, another echo in the wind. And oh, just an echo in the wind. Hear the night come calling, hear the night calling us home. Hear the night come calling, hear the night come calling us home. In the Hotel St. John, it's near time for moving on. Another road, another town, another song, another echo in the wind. And all we are is just an echo in the wind. Hear the night come calling, hear the night come calling us home. Hear the night come calling, hear the night come calling us home.
The Lost Brothers with Echoes in the Wind, live in studio on the Today with Sean O'Rourke programme. And one last look at Brexit. If it goes through, will there be an early election? Lise Hand and the panel on Late Debate have their thoughts.
We'll be very tempted to look at a November election. I really do. Anyone you talk to in Leinster House is, you know,
Now, in fairness, everyone in Leinster House always thinks there's going to be an election.
I was just about to say that.
Literally, the only thing that actually gets the corridors in buzzing these days is the actual smell of an election.
Yeah, I look at the haircuts that Fine Gaelers have, and if anybody, if two or three of them get a haircut in the 1 week, I'm convinced.
Watch The Hairdressers from Late Debate on Radio 1. Until next week, Sláinte.